Thursday, May 8th. This is Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron. Thanks for joining us, folks. And what do we have on the show today, Cherry?
So I've been a voracious reader my whole life.
Good for you.
And my first dabble into romance novels was in middle school, because the rule in my grandma's house was you can read anything as long as you are reading.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And she
That's
had a little
powerful
room.
Incentive to read.
She had a little room full of books.
Okay.
And one full shelf on the bottom was all romance novels. You know the
and
ones.
You crouched down there.
I crouched down there and went through the whole row of books.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So grandma's reading room.
Grandma's reading room.
So when you got into the room and you could pick any book, did you start with the romance shelf or you got there eventually?
I got there eventually.
Yeah.
And I just kept going.
Yeah.
I just kept going.
Stayed on that shelf for a bit.
And the thing is, romance novels are having a moment right now. Sales have more than doubled in the last 3 years, and a genre that was once whispered about, people kind of hid their
bottom
affinity
shelf.
For it. Yeah, bottom shelf reading, right, is now something that people are talking about online. So today we're going to explore why readers are flocking to stories that celebrate pleasure, longing, intimacy, and happily ever afters. And we have some cool guests that are coming in studio. This is going to be a fun, spicy show. And the question for you is, do you like romance novels and spicy books? Why do you think spicy books have become so popular lately? You can give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to leave your questions and comments in the chat.
And these are not your grandma's romance novels that are popular today.
No.
Things have changed a little bit.
Things have changed a lot. Okay.
Speaking of something special, you might even say spicy. Mm-hmm. When you send in your comments today to the show, you will have a chance to win two tickets to an upcoming concert at the 118 North venue in Wayne.
It is a Nina Simone. Let me get that straight. It is a Nina Simone tribute act performing this Sunday, May 11th. Three winners will be chosen today at random and can pick between the matinee and the evening show. So you do have a choice there.
Get your comments in for a chance to win those tickets valued at $50 a pair.
Not bad.
And also, by the way, get in your DJ of the day submissions. It's Thursday, which means we want your music picks for the end of our show. You pick the song, or one of you does. We want mood music today. Send producer Paige
some, you know the kind.
Some mood music.
Whatever you want to call it.
Send those submissions by 12:30 to studio2@whyy.org.
Yeah.
First, a trio of local news stories, starting with a terrifying incident in West Philadelphia yesterday. Here's what happened. There was a fight outside of Overbrook High School after dismissal between large groups of kids. A 30-year-old man arrived to the fight with a pistol. Police officers were trying to break up the fight, and a bullet from this 30-year-old man's pistol allegedly ricocheted off the ground and up into the abdomen of a responding police officer. The officer was rushed to Penn Presbyterian in critical but stable condition. Police have identified the 30-year-old man who fired the shot as Deshaun Say. He was taken into custody Wednesday, and today was charged with several charges, including aggravated assault. Here's Police Commissioner Kevin Bethel talking about his arrest outside Penn Presbyterian Hospital yesterday.
When a 30-year-old man comes to a fight with children, what the hell are they going to do? And then you bring a gun. So you're a coward anyway. You're going to come to the fight, come to fight.
Unusually harsh
and
emotionally charged words from Police Commissioner Kevin Bethel there.
Yeah, those comments from the commissioner went viral online. I saw them bubbling up on my Instagram feed. And a lot of the comments were people saying he's absolutely right. He also said it can't just be police and school officials doing the work to keep violence at bay. He implored parents to step up and step in. And you think it could have been much worse.
Yes.
This officer hopefully will be okay. But can you imagine? I mean, this is a school setting. Philadelphia, the city, has done so much work to try to bring gun violence down, to try to bring the violence down. And I just think what could have happened if the officers weren't on the scene there.
Yeah, tough to say that you feel lucky, mm-hmm. but in a sense you do, because you're right. It could have been so much worse. This was a crowded and yes. frenetic scene. Mm-hmm. Story number two, Cherry, another really important story that has been evolving.
Yeah.
You could say over months, but really has evolved more over the past week.
Yeah. After a New York Magazine article raised serious mental health concerns about Senator John Fetterman, Philadelphia Inquirer's Julia Taruso has an article this morning that also raises questions about the Pennsylvania senator's ability to do his job. Now, the Inquirer talked with about a half dozen former Fetterman staffers, all who have expressed concerns for the senator and his ability to do his job. They say he was disengaged, often absent, something the constituents and other lawmakers have complained about for a few months. People have described Senator Fetterman's behavior as erratic. They said he's often lost his temper. And Taruso describes a meeting Fetterman had with teachers' union representatives in which he lost his temper and was yelling and banging his fist on the table. And in that New York Magazine piece that I mentioned, his former chief of staff, Adam Gentleson, questioned whether Fetterman was taking his medication following his bout with clinical depression. Of course, that came after he suffered a stroke. So, by the way, Fetterman has categorically denied these claims. He's dismissed them, saying that they were false. He called the New York Magazine article a hit job. Take a listen to what he had to say on CNN.
My doctors are like, John is great, and I am on all of the plan that it's always been, and it's incredibly invasive, and it's like, so someone that was trying to accumulate my medical records and leak those things, that's part of this weird grudge for this hit piece.
And so, Avi, we've talked about the show that, you know, we haven't seen the senator right. in Pennsylvania very often. It's very rare that you see him. I think he only had one appearance in Pennsylvania since August. So this has been bubbling to the surface, and people wonder if this is the reason why.
Two thoughts on this. Mm-hmm. One, I understand people might think that this is motivated by politics because Fetterman has not been as progressive as some of his supporters and staffers hoped he would be on several issues.
Yeah.
That said, we have certainly seen politicians evolve politically mm-hmm. while in office. For instance, U.S. Senator Arlen Specter started his career as a Democrat, became a Republican, then became a Democrat again. And we don't always hear, in conjunction with that, concerns about fitness to do the job.
Yeah.
So there's mm-hmm. a lot of smoke here. And usually where there's smoke, there is some fire. But of course, we don't have total transparency on this. We can only read the reporting like the rest of you. I will say, speaking of smoke, we want to note there's some breaking news out of the Vatican. White smoke specifically announcing that a new pope has been selected.
Wow.
So when we have more on that, we will bring you that. If there's live breaking coverage to go to, we will go to that coverage. Just noting that right now,
wow.
if you are listening live. Third local story,
yes.
very far from the Vatican, mm-hmm. although this impacts the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
mRNA technology was key, of course, in developing COVID vaccines, Cherry.
Yes.
But now it is a target, and a prominent local researcher is speaking out. There was mm-hmm. a story today in the New York Times describing efforts at the federal and state level to shift funding away from mRNA technology, despite its incredible promise.
Yeah.
The NIH has diverted $500 million initially targeted for mRNA research and development. There are dozens of bills in state legislatures about mRNA. And here's how all of this gets local. Drew Weissman is the director of the Institute for RNA Innovation at Penn. And Weissman was a pioneer in this
yeah.
field. He's a 2023 Nobel laureate.
Mm-hmm.
And he told the Times in this story, this is amazing, that one of his federal grants was canceled. And he said there are half dozen others at Penn that got slashed simply because they mentioned mRNA. That's Weissman's perspective.
Yeah, it's so interesting. He says that, you know, this research is gonna continue, right?
Right.
It has too much promise. It'll probably take root in other countries, which means
yeah.
America could soon not be the leader in this type of technology. And what comes to me is that, you know, a technology that went from being lauded as, you know, with the Nobel Prize, right? With coming in and helping us deal with COVID-19 is now being politicized.
Yeah, because of COVID,
because
right?
Because of COVID,
I mean, I think it's fair to say it's because it's bound up in the COVID response and therefore is now caught in this web of everything about COVID, which is so polarized.
And the
can I just say quickly, mRNA is used for all sorts of things, just vaccines. Like, there's cancer treatment.
Yeah. Yes. And that's what I was going to say. Like, there is so much tied up into this, and it could help so many people in so many ways. And so we'll see if the tides change back, and hopefully mRNA technology will be embraced again.
I guess we have time now for our secret fourth story.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, a bonus story. A bonus story, Jerry. We did note this really funny thing on the Philly subreddit.
You love the Philly subreddit.
I love the Philly subreddit. Mm-hmm. Full disclosure. And on the Philly subreddit, a user posted that they had recently lost a lot of weight.
Congratulations.
And they had these new suits mm-hmm. to match their new body. And they wanted to show off their new body in these new suits. And where should they go in Philly to, like, you know,
be hot?
Yeah, to be hot, to strut around mm-hmm. with their new suit. And so I ask you, Cherry, because you're a fashion expert, you're a woman of class and taste.
Oh, thank you, Avi Wolfman. Aaron, I'm blushing here. Thank you.
Where would you go to show off your new suit or dress?
Yeah, well, I have three places. Mm-hmm. Number one, 19 at the top of the Bellevue Hotel. Beautiful view.
Mm-hmm.
People usually look really good in there. Sky High Bar and Lounge at the top of the Four Seasons. You're going to pay for that martini, but you're going to be surrounded by some beautiful people. And also Midnight and the Wicket.
What's that?
It is a speakeasy and jazz lounge near 15th and Sanson. And let me tell you, I've never been there, but I follow them on Instagram. And it's on my date night bucket list. Me and the hubs, we want to go because everybody looks so good in that place.
Well, here's what makes this a really good question, which is Philly's not a dress up town.
No, but
it's
there are places downtown where you can dress up.
So here's my humble suggestion, because I didn't know how to answer this because I don't wear suits.
Every once in a while.
Okay. So here's my thought. And see if you follow me on this.
I'm following.
Why not wear the suit to, like, a McDonald's?
Oh, goodness.
You'll really stand out.
But he just lost all his weight. I mean,
really?
I
just mean, like, a place that's where you wouldn't expect people to be wearing suits. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, maybe just walking around on Broad Street because then you'll really stand out. Like, if you go to one of these swanky places, and I trust your suggestions.
Yeah.
But if you go to one of these swanky places, wouldn't you be concerned that you're just going to blend in with all the other glittery, pretty people?
But he's glittery and pretty. So, yeah. I mean,
but he doesn't want to blend in. He wants to pop.
Well,
We're assuming his pronouns, by the way. I don't know if it's he.
But
she,
you know
they.
What? I say just you know, you set the tone.
Yeah.
Wear whatever you want to wear, wherever you want to wear it, and do your thing. And I want to see this person strut with their new body.
I do want to see the pictures. By the way, we are about to transition in just about a minute to NPR special coverage, and that's because of what we mentioned earlier. The news out of the Vatican is white smoke. The conclave has adjourned. They have picked a new pope. So again, in about now 40 seconds, we're going to take you over to NPR special coverage. Hey, we're not going anywhere here at Studio 2. We're going to be live on YouTube. So hey, if you're a Studio 2 fan, you've never checked out the YouTube.
Yes, this is your chance.
So go to the WHYY YouTube page where you can see our live stream. Keep the comments coming. And we'll also release this later if you miss it as a podcast.
As a podcast. This is your chance to weigh in and win those tickets, though. Make sure you're...
Good point.
Check out YouTube.
Good point. And welcome back, everybody, to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Romance novels have millions of readers, but the books have been looked down upon or trivialized in the past. We think of paperbacks in the grocery store or the airport with a hero on the cover, his shirt off, chest all chiseled up, hair is flowing. He's many women's fantasy.
And readers have known for years what some of us have discounted, that romance novels of all kinds are a worthy indulgence. There's literary merit, complex themes, and real value in the escape and entertainment they provide, which is perhaps why the spicy book boom is upon us. Sales are hot, 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 up more than 50% since 2021, and the infatuation does not seem to be slowing down.
Modern romance novels have a range of themes and characters, from aliens and robots to medieval royalty, vampires, and rom-coms that have readers falling in love. So what's behind the rise in spicy books, and why are they so much fun? We have one popular romance author with us in our Philadelphia studio to help us figure it all out. Betty Corello is a local romance writer, and her new book, 32 Days in May, comes out next week. Betty, welcome to Studio 2.
Oh my gosh, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
32 Days in May. I am curious about that title. We'll get to that later. There's also a brand new romance bookstore that just opened in Philadelphia. It's the only one in the city. Joining us as well is Tina Long. She is the owner of that Manny Young store. It is called Cupid's Bookshop. Tina, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes. And for our listeners, are you a romance reader? Why do you think spicy books have become so popular lately? You can call 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to drop your question or comment in the chat.
And don't forget to send in those DJ of the Day submissions. We're looking for mood music.
We are.
To end
you know what we're talking about. You know what we're talking about.
Yeah, by the way, you two, feel free to drop a mood music song suggestion if you want. But let me start with the both of you. I'll start with you, Betty. Like,
sure.
You are part of this boom in romance novels, but you're also an observer as well. To what do you attribute the dramatic sales increase in romance novels?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm not going to act like I'm an expert. I'm just going to talk a little bit from my experiences as a reader and as a writer. I think there's a few things happening at once. Mm-hmm. I think undeniably we have to talk about TikTok when we talk about the boom in romance. And we also have to talk about the COVID pandemic when folks had more time to focus on reading. Happy circumstances, neutral circumstances, really, really sad circumstances, folks were looking to escape. So I think some of the romance boom ties back to that. And TikTok has just kind of ballooned from there. But we also have to talk about how romance has always been so, so popular.
So popular and beloved,
Beloved. And it's genre fiction is like the backbone of modern publishing. And I think when we think about romance, we do think about like the Fabio cover, mass market paperbacks, which are so important. They're so important to the genre. But it's also more than that. There's closed door romance. There are religious romances. There are interfaith romances. There is a romance for literally anything. If you can think about it, there's a romance.
There's a romance.
Wow.
So Tina Long, you have the perspective of you know, ordering all these titles and seeing which ones sell and which ones don't. Why do you think there has been this boom?
Well, I used to be a bookstagrammer back in the day before BookTok. And I feel like it's such a...
And by the way, that's Instagram.
Instagram, before the TikTok. I think it was a great sense of community. I think seeing other people... Obviously, the Bridgerton books and like Twilight and all those were really popular before then. But even after watching, I'm like, that's when the ACOTAR, the A Court of Thorn and Roses kind of... books came popular with Bookstagram for me, and I think just it's escapism. Like normally when you're like, why would I be reading about fairies and you know, romance, but then seeing other people read about it and recommending it online, I think that's what made it grow. And just so organically too.
And what was so interesting to me is the variety of what falls under romance, because you know most people think Harlequin novels, historic romance, but it's so, the variety is off the chain, like vampires, aliens. Can
Cowboys,
you tell us what falls under this big umbrella? And some of the stuff I think people aren't even aware of.
Yeah, I mean, just thinking about contemporary, right? Contemporary genre. There falls under cowboy romance, like the Western romances. We have all other types of sports romance. It goes under like hockey, football, all different types. There's also even the radio host one, First Time Caller, which is a very popular one.
We gotta talk about that. Wait, there is what's called First Time Caller.
BK Borson.
Yeah, there's another one coming out in September by Rachel Runya Katz called Isn't It Obvious, which is about a podcast specifically. It's like a retelling of You've Got Mail. Yeah.
Any kind of scenario you could think of.
What happens in First Time Caller?
Oh my gosh.
Do you remember?
Yeah, it's a radio host in Baltimore. He writes about love. and he's actually fallen out of love. Mm-hmm. And we have a child that calls in for her mom, who's a single mom. And she calls in asking for love advice for her mom. And so he brings her, the mom, in as a guest because the ratings were went viral. And of course, it's forced proximity, which we'll get into, like, tropes there. And they, you know, fall in love. Wow. So being stuck in a booth together.
That's like Sleepless in Seattle.
Sleepless in Seattle.
I believe it's a retelling.
A modern version.
Modern retelling.
Are there types of are there subgenres within romance that are really popping off right now, or things that you see you're just like, whoa, the demand for this cannot be met?
Oh, everyone's loving cowboys.
Cowboys are
Westerns, yeah.
Cowboys. I think you have like two camps, right? Because like everything in the world, there is like divides. Mm-hmm. So I think you on one side, you have hockey, cowboy. And then on the other side, I do think we are seeing a big resurgence of the paranormal. And in particular, you've mentioned aliens. And thank you so much, because we do have to talk about Ice Planet Barbarians.
Yes. What is Ice Planet Barbarians? I read about this. Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Blue people?
Yes,
blue and people. Big blue.
Big blue. And you would be surprised how quickly you get on board. And I say that as someone who is skeptical. Uh-huh. Yeah, Ice Planet Barbarians is about a spaceship of human women who were abducted from Earth, and they're abducted by evil aliens. And they managed to overtake the ship and crash land on a planet that they call Not Hoth, which is a Star Wars joke I learned very recently. Mm-hmm. I'm not a Star Wars fan, but it is a hostile ice planet, and the species that lives on the planet doesn't have enough women. Mm-hmm. And they also have this sort of like,
so they're thirsty. Yeah, go
they're
ahead.
They're thirsty. Mm-hmm. They're thirsty. Uh-huh. And they also have this like soulmate thing. I don't know why you're laughing.
I'm learning.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm learning.
They have this like soulmate orb inside of them that like thrums and vibrates when they meet their fated mate. And fated mate is a trope.
Yeah.
And to just kind of take this back to what you were saying, I think like a veil of shame has been lifted off of this stuff because a lot of these tropes, a lot of these themes, these big blue men, these cowboys, folks have been writing about this stuff in fan fiction for years.
Right.
And it was sort of like sequestered to this part of the internet.
So why is there less shame around it
people,
now?
Yeah.
And why are publishers like feeling like, yeah, we can put, you know, our money and our promotion behind these, or maybe they're not. I don't know. Like,
no,
they are.
So, totally are.
So
yeah.
So things that used to be taboo no longer are within the romance genre. So how do you explain that?
I don't know if it's like they're less taboo within the genre. I think the people who are, I think it's, there's like a mainstreaming of it. There's less of a fear to talk about. And like, I remember when I wrote fan fiction when I was 12, I was like, if anyone finds out, I'm getting bullied off of Earth. I'm going to Not Hoth. Like I'm done on planet Earth. But now it's like, I wrote fan fiction. It was so fun. I met friends. It was, so I don't know if you have a perspective.
Yeah, it's community too. And I also wrote fan fiction.
Love it.
Very poorly written at 13. Mm-hmm. Roswell fan fiction. You know, right? Michael and Maria. It was like, back in the day, there was no social media. So it was a mailing list that you put on, you know, you get added and you could send each other fanfics. And I think social media has helped vastly with the whole shame and lifting of the veil. Like,
because you can connect with other people instead of feeling isolated.
My first was seeing actually a post on, I think it was Instagram, where someone was like, oh, you want to read something really silly? It was about the blue aliens and their different body parts and all these different things. I'm like, what are you talking about? Read the first one, got hooked. There's I think over 10 books at this point.
There's like 13 plus. And they're so funny. I think people hear big blue aliens and they assume it's done without like an ounce of humor and like in total earnest. But Ruby Dixon is so funny.
She's so good.
So funny.
And I wonder, because I think there was so much love for these books that you were able to open a whole bookstore.
Oh, yes.
And so tell me what went through your mind. You're like, you know what? I got to create a space for this.
Well,
you lean all the way in.
Yeah, I opened a store, but I wanted something a little bit different because I used to get so much shame going into bookstores asking for the romance section, right? And they'd be like, oh, we don't carry that here, or it's behind the counter, or it was a very small section. So for me, I didn't have a traditional bookselling background. I didn't go to like a bookselling school or go to any of those programs. I wanted to open a store as a romance reader. Mm-hmm. Like, I wanted everything set up as genres, separately paranormal to, like, Regency, like, historical to contemporary to also vintage used books. So we mm-hmm. have an ode to that as well. So I wanted to make it where I would want to shop.
Mm. Yeah.
And, I mean, obviously, it's you know, we had an amazing grand opening last week.
Congratulations.
People are excited to read romance and be public about it. People come up to me and tell me about, like, I just read a book about, like, mermans and, like, you know, loved it. And I love hearing people's, like, tropes that they love or, yeah. like, different fictional characters they fall in love with.
And it almost, like, having the space itself brings all the people who yeah. love the books together, and then you can gather.
Yeah, and or some people are like, have you read this book? I haven't. And I'm like, I love getting recommendations, too, from, like, indie authors. And I want to stalk those people,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
I guess I'm trying to follow the evolution here, mm-hmm. hearing about your guys' experience when you were younger, feeling kind of, like, isolated, maybe a little bit of shame around the fan fiction. Then the internet happens. People who love this genre and the subgenres within it start connecting. That connection strengthens their sort of, like, their pride in it, and now they're showing up in person somewhere mm-hmm. to connect with each other IRL. It kind of comes full circle yeah. in a yeah. sense.
And now book clubs are on the rise too.
Yeah.
So we have two book clubs at our store, but there's all over the country. People are having just clubs and communities where they can chat about.
Yeah. I wonder books. Like, who is reading these books? And the reason why I asked you this is because there was a study that came out that said 63% of men actually admit to being fans of this genre of book, and 60% compared to 60% of women. And that kind of shocked me
yeah.
that so many men were willing to admit it. And I think Bryce Harper admitted that he likes to read, you know, romance novels at the end of the day to wind down. So yeah. I wonder, like, who are your readers, Betty? Yeah. And then who comes into the store? Tell me.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'll start. I think my readers, my group is smaller than yours. I definitely write contemporary romance. Mm-hmm. And when I started writing, I wanted to take a different approach to the typical, like, female main character, or FMC mm-hmm. as they're called. Frequently in romances, there can be an overemphasis, and there are so many romances out there, so I don't want to say it's a majority. There's a portion of romances out there that can overemphasize small white women from a sort of upper middle class background.
They're overrepresented.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, it's specifically in popularity,
yeah.
I think. So when I first wrote Summertime Punchline, which was my first book, I was coming off doing stand-up for a lot of years, and COVID had hit, and I wanted to write about a stand-up comedian that was a woman, mm-hmm. And particularly her grappling with jokes that she had written about her body and creating an environment where folks were laughing about her mid-size body, which mid-size, for folks who don't know, is sort of like a way of talking about smaller plus-size bodies now. Mm-hmm. It's the language that's used. So I wanted to have that be the central person who, you know, someone who's traditionally a side character, having her take center stage. And I kind of describe it as, like, you know, the friend that you would call in the rom-com movie. She's, like, on the phone for 15 seconds.
Being sidekick,
like,
yeah.
You go, girl. And then you never hear from her again, like, putting her center stage. Mm-hmm. So when I meet my readers, they're like sassy tattooed girls with, like, funky haircuts, and yeah. I'm like, I found you, I love you, mm-hmm. like my
finding people, love. Yeah.
My people, like, you're just, like, loud mouths who are, like, want to be funny, and you don't want to change, and, you know, you deserve love, and you deserve to see yourself in books.
And the latest book, it's coming out 32 days in May. Mm-hmm. Similar idea or?
Yeah, a little bit different. So this one also takes place at a fictional shore point called Evergreen, loosely based on sort of, like, Asbury Park, Ocean City, New Jersey.
Right.
And in this character, the main character in this one, her name's Nadia. She's a former art director at an ad agency who, after being diagnosed with lupus, her life sort of implodes because her job implodes.
Yeah.
So this is sort of if in my first book I was dealing with all my feelings about stand-up comedy, and this one I'm dealing with all my feelings about girl bosses and like reforming yourself as a girl boss.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, by the way, 32 days in there. Just curious.
You gotta read the book.
Like, okay, fine.
And by the way, because we this is part of our tease today was about spicy books. And I want you to talk about the spice level because there are some spice moments in this book. And do you write spicy? And by the way, explain what spicy is, Tina. Like, and then I want you to rate your book. Yeah.
I mean, spicy levels, it could start from, like, I think level one, which is, like, kissing, right? Like, and then it goes all the way.
And there are some books that never really progress beyond that.
I call it, like, closed door, even, you know, where they fade to black, where, you know, they kiss and then the doors close and curtains, you know, and you know, they wake up the next morning.
Yeah,
and you're like,
exactly.
And then some
tangled
people, that's what
covers
they want.
Or something. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sheet under the armpits.
Yeah. But I think the spice level is really subjective. Like, I could read I'm like, this is 3 out of 5 spicy for me. And she'd, you know, and the Betty would read and be like, that is not spicy at all. You know what I mean?
It's
so it is
relative.
Depending.
Yeah.
So I'm very easily shocked.
I know, yeah. So it really depends. But there's some that, you know, are a little bit more, you know, 5 out of 5, which everyone usually agrees on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the
high spice.
Yeah. You think you've hit the ceiling of like how spicy a book can be. And then you read something and you're like, oh my God,
that was way spicier than the last thing I read.
Yeah. I need to go to church.
Cause there's levels to it.
Yeah. And it's like,
is there a different term for the books that are toward the 5 out of 5 side? Like those get categorized a different way.
I mean, we usually put it more on like, it's more erotica.
Erotica.
Yeah.
And I think also depending on how the spice is approached, it could be dark romance.
Dark. Yeah.
Okay, so
and what
does
dark romance
term,
mean? Please say exactly what that is.
For me, there's a lot of different tropes in there. It could be something that could be have a little bit more trigger warnings.
Okay.
So there's usually in the front, the authors usually write like a little bit of that, like, you know, if there's like bullying or like, you know, grief or loss, or, you know, or something like that, where, you know, it gets there. There is, you know, some questionable tropes in there.
Yeah, I think also the framing. It's like. It's like mafia romances are a big subgenre, which is funny.
So there could be like explicit violence.
I think like the kidnapping. Direction of kidnappings.
I've seen books that deal with addiction, all kinds of stuff, and it goes into that as well, the spice as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
yeah.
Some of it I even categorize as like horror. Mm-hmm. Slash romance slash, you know.
Yeah, romance plus.
So it's like a mix of genres.
And so I do want to follow up with you, Tina, because I wanted to see who's coming into the store. Like, do you see it? Is it just women or is it a variety of folks?
I've been seeing a lot more couples coming in together.
Couples.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
Where they will shop together and they will say, you know, we're reading this together.
Oh.
Or even, you know, even some like fantasy books like the Fourth Wing series, right?
Yeah. So tell
us, it makes sense. You watch a TV show
like
together,
dragons.
You would read a book together.
Yeah, they'll be like, oh, he read it first, and then I'll read another book. We exchange books and we chat about it.
Yeah.
So I think romanticism is a huge, huge, huge category, which is romance and fantasy. And I think they easily bring couples together who one maybe just reads sci-fi and fantasy and one reads romance, and they just fuse those together.
So this could be a tool then.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
absolutely. Ooh. Absolutely.
Some comments coming in. Someone just wanted to know, a Broza fan wanted to know, have I read any romance books?
Have you, Avi?
I don't think so, but I guess it all depends on definition. Like, there's so many books that have romance in them, right?
Yeah,
so it's like, The Great Gatsby a type of romance?
Oh my God. You want to light the internet on fire today, don't you? I think in order to be a romance, there has to be a happily ever after.
Okay.
I think that is kind of the general consensus.
Okay.
So it has to end on a positive note.
Yeah, the couple is the main focus.
Yeah, Great Gatsby would not hit that.
No.
Okay. Julie mentions there is another public radio romance called The X Talk.
Oh.
And
I've
looked it up and it's real. The description is Shay Goldstein has been a producer at her Seattle public radio station for nearly a decade.
Yeah.
But lately it's been a constant clash between her and her newest colleague, Dominic, who's fresh off a journalism master's program and convinced he knows everything
about public
radio.
Is that enemies become lovers? Is that a trope?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, you got it.
And that's by Rachel Lynn Solomon. She's a goat of the genre.
A goat.
Wow.
Yeah.
And a goat would give her talents to a public radio storyline.
I love it.
So we'll be back here on Studio 2 with a lot more talking about the romance genre book boom. Stay tuned.
And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the boom in romance novels. Spicy book sales are way up. and so is the popularity of romance book clubs and stores.
Yes, and our guests today are Betty Carello, a local romance author whose forthcoming book, 32 Days in May, comes out this Tuesday. We also have Tina Long, the owner of the romance bookstore Cupid's Bookshop in Manayunk.
Our questions for you: are you a romance reader? What do you think? Why do you think spicy books have become so popular? You can drop a comment right there in the YouTube chat. You can still email us, studio2@whyy.org.
And so, Betty, I wanted you to read from your book, 32 Days in May. I picked a little bit of a spicy portion. I'd love for you to share. Go right ahead.
Sure thing. Should I provide some context?
Yeah, give us some context.
Okay.
Yes.
So Nadia has crashed out, as the kids say, and her rheumatologist has set her up with his cousin, who is a former actor turned recluse, and he's also very messy. And they decide to go on a date, and things take a turn. Okay. His fingers migrate. They find the nape of my neck. They burrow into my hairline. He presses his forehead into mine. Nadia. He whispers my name, and I know it's part of a longer thought. I can tell by the way he hangs onto the vowels. What? I drag my hands over his arms, feeling his muscles tense and relax. Just say it. He makes no move to pull away from me. Instead, his lips travel over my cheeks, across my jaw, down my neck. All the while, he says, I'm not good at following up. I have a way of taking good people in good situations and using them up, just sucking the life out of them. And you're great. I think you're gorgeous and funny and smart, but I'm a vampire. And I just don't want you to take it personally. What makes you think? I say, my voice heavy and slow. I don't pull away. I can't look at him. I'm ever going to speak to you again.
Mm.
All right.
First of all, that was a very visual, you know, I was imagining, you know, blow by blow what was going on in that encounter. And this makes me wonder, like, when you're writing this, how do you know this is going to be a good story? And especially that scene pulled me right in. Oh, a great scene.
You. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I think it's about, this is really what I love about romance, is you can feel in the writing how much fun the author is having while they're writing it. And while I'm writing, if it's the right scene, the right moment, the right tension, the right spice, it just glides. And even if it's not, it doesn't come out perfect, I have to edit it, but it flows in a way where I'm like, this makes sense for these characters. And each book has different levels of spice, and you know, the spice serves different purposes, in my opinion, for the characters. And when it's right, you can feel it.
Yeah. Hmm.
One thing I'm kind of like trying to wrestle with is the idea that there's been this big boom in the popularity of romance novels. At the same time, we're reading studies and headlines about how younger people are not as interested in relationships and even having sex. And it does feel like incongruous in some way, but maybe those trends do fit together somehow. I mean, we're talking about TikTok, right? That's got to be a lot of younger readers on there who are responding to this. What do you make of younger readers and their response to romance novels today?
I mean, there's a lot of these stickers I have in my store, right, that are called I'm in love with a fictional character. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are standards kind of set for expectations that you would want from your partner, that these books, they kind of go above and beyond. Mm-hmm. And then now I think younger readers now want partners that can rise to that level, like at least close to that, to be like, maybe you need to do more. You know what I mean? And I think there's something there to that.
I think there's a longing for the organic.
Yeah.
And dating apps have taken out a lot of the organic ways of meeting people. And
yeah, there's not like a lot of swiping left or right in a romance novel. There's something, there's more magic usually in the story.
Yeah. A spark that
there's
happens.
A spark.
A meet cute, you know?
And it's not to say that people who met their partners organically didn't date like a ton of flops or like go on a million bad dates. It's just, I think for younger folks, they're nostalgic for a life that they didn't get to live, yeah. which is like maybe part of youth. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah.
There's a lot of books now like, oh, like, you know, takes place in the 90s, you know, or 80s, you know, and you're like, oh. Yeah. It was a romantic time, I guess, where you can meet someone at a bookstore or a coffee shop. Or
yeah.
It's so true. Yeah.
And the other thing that draws me into this is people who love this genre read a lot.
Yes.
How much are people taking in? And they're usually very easy reads. I know I go on vacation. You can read 3 books easy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can read in one sitting sometimes. So how much are people taking in?
It can be a range. People have told me they read like 60 books to 100 books, over 100 books a year.
Yeah.
Wow.
I've talked to even like my aunt who reads romance books, and she reads them online on her Kindle. And she's like, I can read 30 books a month. Just straight through, you know, and mm-hmm. it's such fast. And sometimes you can reread books that you love. So it could be as little as 6 books a month to 100.
Yeah. You can really be taking it in.
Yeah. And I think considering audiobook performances now are so wonderful and so accessible through the library. And, you know, to me, audiobooks are reading. And if you count those, like, yeah, it can be a lot. I mean, there are days when I would rather listen to an audiobook while I'm driving mm-hmm. rather than music. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the news. Seriously, right?
And that goes to what Julie comments, who says, I also think that people are leaning into romance, spicy or not, because it provides an escape from reality lately. It's nice to read about mm-hmm. people treating each other well and finding their happy ending.
Mm.
And one of the things about romance novels is that it's about the couple, and that the couple usually wins in the end. How important is that? I mean, people don't want a sad romance novel, right?
They want, I think, if you were to look at across everything, what people want is the triumph.
Yeah.
And the even when it's aliens on Not Hoth, they want that grounded triumph of love yeah. and tenderness and care. So even if it's sad, even if I think this book is sad. I think there's some sad things that happen. I think it's two characters who identify as sad, but ultimately I think their love is a triumph, and that's what people really love that. Yeah. It's very beautiful.
Could the triumph still like contain tragedy? Like the mm-hmm. example I think of is Romeo and Juliet, not necessarily a triumph, but obviously there is something kind of transcendent about their love. Like in a romance novel, or in most romance novels that are really, really popular, do you see tragic endings like that typically, or is that like super, super duper rare?
I think it depends. I've read books where they do end up together, but it's usually like a romanticier.
Yeah.
You know, where they end up together, but the circumstances were awful. Like, you know, everything has gone wrong. They did everything they could. Even I think Atonement, I'm thinking of that movie.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Where it's, mm-hmm. it's, there's romance in it, but it's a very tragic ending where they don't end up together.
Hmm.
I think something very beautiful about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get into sort of the politics of genre once you get, you have like a tragic ending.
Is it no longer a romance novel?
It's women's fiction.
Yeah, there's sort of a semantic difference here. But I wanted to ask also in terms of trends, like we've done a whole show about this, about the rise in the availability of online pornography. This has been happening over a long, mm-hmm. long period of time, right? And so now you have a whole generation of people who've grown up with this at their fingertips. And I wonder also if in some ways this is a reaction to that, talking about kind of like counter trends to trends, being like, I grew up in this world with that depiction of sex mm-hmm. and romance, like right there on my screen. And do I want to, am I kind of looking for something that's like a counterweight?
Mm-hmm.
to that. Does that make sense at all?
It does.
Yeah.
I think with the similarities, I think there's a fine line, right?
Yeah.
Some of the erotica. Mm-hmm. But I think it's different when it's like a fictional world where you create these characters in your mind
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and they can look or talk how you imagine they would be. And also I think romance books are popular because there's a build-up to the romance most of the time.
Yeah,
versus pornography, you know, it's just
straight in. And like,
right, right.
Sometimes when I read some books, I'm like, they go straight into it. And I'm like, that's not exciting to me. And I could tell this is probably not written by a woman or, you know, whatever. And it's like, you have to have something there, a build-up to it.
Yeah.
And that's something the romance of it.
Yeah, and I think like even within the world of pornography, there's sort of a counterweight where it's like
yes, women, even with it, yes, yeah, totally, women you're led right.
studios. So I think, or even like the rise of OnlyFans, where it's like seizing the means of production.
Yeah, no, but that's true.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
totally no, that's true. There already is that backlash yeah. within mm-hmm. that world,
and I yeah. think romance is part of that. Erotica is part of it. Mm-hmm. It's about like a recentering of grounded desire and. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we could talk forever about
and the sensuality, way. All
sensuality,
those things.
Yes,
I wanted to, Betty. You touched on this, like who is featured in some of these mm-hmm. Novels, and do people care? Like, I mean, and I wonder about this because I used to love Zane, which was more on the erotica side back in the day, and you think about who is centered. Have you seen that shift? And do the readers care? Do they want to see themselves, or are they just? You know, you have LGBTQ plus fiction now that's mm-hmm. very romance based. Do people mm-hmm. want to see themselves depicted, or can they read any kind of love story?
Yeah, I think it totally depends on the reader, but it goes without saying that romances that center Black, Indigenous, people of color, queer characters, they don't get the same push. They don't get the same marketing. They don't get the same shelf space as white characters and white romances. So the desire is there. The readers are there. Of course, people want to see themselves. And I read queer romances and I don't identify as queer. Like there's people who read voraciously across. It's about making sure that those books are visible. And I think the readers will come because, yeah, they if you're reading 200 books
yeah.
a year,
that room.
Please yeah. Tell me that these are not all just white straight people.
Yeah, yeah. No, we try to stock every genre and every, you know, AAPI authors for our AAPI author month. We have like Anna Huang's new book that just came out. So we want to feature a lot of Black authors, LGBT authors, and different queer romances. And mm-hmm. there is so much interest in them and people are buying them. So like as long as, you know, we have our store, we'll always stock yeah, these genres.
Yeah. yeah.
Outside of course, Betty Carrello, who are some of the big stars that are like mm-hmm. emerging in the genre that mm-hmm. like are like bright light names in this world that maybe someone who doesn't read these types of books doesn't know about? I mean, who's like out there just like...
Yeah, if know, I wanted to put together a reading list, I'm like...
Yeah, reading list, but also just like, I guess a taste of who's really like the vanguard right now.
Oh my God.
I mean, there's so many.
There's so many.
But I mean, if you think like the big giants, you know?
Like, yeah, I mean, the big giants and then like I'm up like a collapsing white dwarf. Like I'm not like a giant guest. There's like the huge names, of course, but I think if we're gonna give some airtime to folks who are doing something different and up and coming.
Yeah, no,
I mean, can of course jump
I mean for instance, like we have an author signing like in a few weeks with our Philly based author, Caroline Frank. And she's writing a book called Reply All that's coming out on May 20th. But, you know, if you're thinking about, like, big giants, too, like, we have Rebecca Yarros, right? I'm talking about someone that's building out their list. Emily Henry is a huge one.
Emily Henry's huge.
Allie
Hazelwood is huge. I think in terms of if you're looking specifically to read Black authors, Rachel Rooney Katz, Shirlene Obobi, yeah. Rissam Nielsen, some of my favorites. I think if you want queer, historical, Lex Croucher.
Casey McQuiston.
Yeah. Also a giant.
Maisie Eddings,
yeah. Yes. Used to be local to Philly. Yes. We could go all day.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm just like coming up. My brain out there coming yeah. up, like
it's
funneling
a good starter
up.
Starter pack, though.
I love this. And I wanted to ask you quickly because a lot of folks have blown up not necessarily going through traditional publishing yeah. houses. They've been able to make money and really get on using Amazon doing self-publishing. Mm-hmm. How has that sort of impacted this whole resurgence of romance and spicy books?
I find that they can publish much more easily because they're self-publishing and then they can set their own prices and they reach out to me directly as a bookseller and I can stock them directly. And I think that's been great to show and give them a platform mm-hmm. yeah. in our store.
Yeah, it's a lot of work to self-publish. Yes. It's a hustle, and you have to be very business-minded. I think Kindle Unlimited has really, it's like a Netflix of books, right? Mm. Like you pay a monthly subscription, and that's how folks are able to read like 200 books a month. So Kindle Unlimited, and a lot of self-pub authors will go directly through Kindle Unlimited, and that is just has created, there's something for everyone. There's so much variety. So you can really make a career self-publishing. I do think that There has been like a self-published and traditional pipeline.
Yeah. It can be a feeder.
Yeah. You know, all publishing is valid.
Yeah. And I think of how 50 Shades of Grey kind of blew up online.
It was fanfic.
And it was yeah. And then it just became a movie. It became this big thing.
Yeah.
Because the fans just loved it and demanded more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then they just kind of, then you went off, there's like Crossfire series, right? Mm-hmm. And like all those other books, billionaire romances, fall off that.
And so as we get ready to wrap up, where do you think it's headed? I mean, you just opened up a brand new bookstore, Tina. So I'm sure you're seeing all kinds of positive things coming in the wake.
I think just more subgenres that we can't even probably think of right now. You know what I mean? Yeah. More aliens, more. Yeah.
Reverse harem.
Reverse harem. Yeah.
Ooh. Yes.
All right. Well, Tina Long is the owner of Cupid's Bookshop in Manayunk. Betty Carello is a local romance author whose forthcoming book is 32 Days in May. And she won't tell me why it's called that. You have to read the book.
It's all right.
Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Of course, it's Thursday, so we got to end with our DJ of the day. And the DJ of the day is Julie. Her submission is Bed Chem by Sabrina Carpenter. And producer Paige says, Sabrina is my queen of spicy lyrics.
I love it.
And she, of course, she has a local connection. She's from Quakertown. So let's hear a little bit of Bed Chem by Sabrina Carpenter.
Are you free next week? I've been waiting really good. Come ride on me. I mean camaraderie. Said you're not in my time zone, but you want to be. Where art thou? Why not upon
all right.
And we also have our three winners there.
Yeah, for the Nina Simone tribute show at the venue 118 North in Wayne. Mara, Julie, and Shirley emailed in. They scored a pair of tickets to the show this Sunday, May 11th. You get to choose between the matinee and the evening show.
And thank you to our producers, Debbie Builder, Paige Marie Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calicay engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. Joan Isabella is our audio general manager from Studio 2 at WHYY in Philly. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arens.
And I'm Cherry Gregg.